Hi, and welcome to GDC. My name is David Holliday. I work with Azure Gaming. Today, I have with me James from PlayFab, CEO of PlayFab. Welcome, James.
Thank you very much.
Tell me a little bit about yourself, and actually tell me a little bit about PlayFab and your journey with PlayFab.
Yeah, so I've been in the game industry for almost 20 years. Most of the time, I was making games. You know, I had my own game studios. One of those got bought by PopCap. I was a PopCap for 8 years. Nice. And while I was a PopCap, I built the first free-to-play game studio for PopCap based in Shanghai, and got to really know what it takes to build live kind of free-to-play games, and realize that these games that are now services require this massive investment in back-end server technology and sort of infrastructure to make these games work. And at EA, we built all that ourselves from scratch. Yeah. Or at PopCap, we built all that from scratch. And then EA bought PopCap. And then at EA, everywhere I looked around the company, different teams were building these same sort of live games with the same sort of services. And so we realized that this is a lot of work, you know, and most small developers can't afford to build this kind of infrastructure for themselves. EA could, right. Microsoft can, you know, Supercell, you know, invested, took a lot of investment money and was able to build that, but most studios can't. And so we saw a need for the kind of infrastructure just to compete. And so after I left EA, we started PlayFab. So that was 4 years ago.
Nice.
And the vision from the very beginning of PlayFab was to provide this sort of all-in-one suite of sort of tools and services that would allow any developer of any size to basically take their game live and then focus on that post-launch kind of live ops phase. And that's what we call it now, live ops. Everything you do after game launches, which is arguably more important now, or as important than building a game right in the first place.
Right, gotcha. So that's super interesting. So that's a tool set. Is it targeted at any just one platform, or is this like across anything? Does this apply to anything? Because I know a lot of mobile games tend to be the free-to-play.
Right.
But is it elsewhere as well?
Yeah, good question. Most of our customers are mobile, to be fair. Probably about 75 to 80% of our current customers are on either iOS or Android. But we support every platform. We're also on PC, we ship games via Steam, we have games on Xbox, PlayStation, we're working on support for Nintendo now. Yeah. So we really are fully cross-platform. That was, again, part of the vision from the beginning, was that I think free-to-play is right, started in mobile, but increasingly now people are realizing that in some ways it's a better model, because it gives players a lot more flexibility in how they want to consume the game.
Yeah.
And it gives developers, you know, frankly, a lot more flexibility to sort of extend the game's life. You know, no longer are you limited to what you shipped in a box the day the game went out the door.
Right.
You can kind of extend it and keep it going. And one thing I talk about a lot when I present to developers is, if you look at the top 10 list of games, I entered the game industry in 2000. And in 2000, one game survived the top 10 from 2000 to 2001. It was The Sims.
Right.
You know, you look back at 2016, just 2 years ago, 70% of the top 10 games in 2016 were still in the top 10 in 2017.
Oh, interesting.
And you can either look in that and get terrified and say, oh my God, it's like impossible to get in the top 10 anymore. But you can also ask yourself, like, why is that? And what's changing in games that you have so many of them now that kind of stick around in the top 10? And the answer is, games are now services. And because they're services, these are being continually updated, continually operated. That live ops phase means these games have a lifespan long beyond just putting it out there in a box.
Right. That's super interesting, because I remember going to the store and, you know, you'd buy a piece of software and you go home and then you'd play for a while and that was it.
Yeah.
Right? And now I see games like a Grand Theft Auto or Rainbow Six Siege, and they seem to be getting more popular as the years go, not like tailing off. They're getting bigger. So quite an interesting model the way games are changing. Now, that concept you're talking about there, so you guys are all about something called Live Ops.
Yeah.
So tell me something about, what is Live Ops? Like, how why is that important to a game?
Right. We as an industry have not yet settled on like what exactly is live ops, right? We're here at GDC right now, right? Great conference. If you look at the content track, most of the content is still focusing on building the game in the first place. We have entire tracks on the art and physics and game design and programming. You know, live ops is relatively new. In fact, actually, I'm going to plug here. We made this little book here called The PlayFab Definitive Guide to Live Ops. If you're here at GDC, you can get a copy. If you're not here at GDC, we're going to have a PDF version available for download after the show. But this is our attempt to sort of codify everything
book,
that we've learned about like what is live ops. Right? So what is live ops? So our definition, or my definition, is it's everything that happens after you launch a game that is not actually changing the game itself. Like, if you're rewriting code and giving an update, to me that's like just making an update to the game.
Yeah.
But to me, live ops is all the things that happen sort of on the back end side, the push changes down the game. So it is adding new content.
Right.
So it's content updates, things like new items you're selling in your store, or new levels or dungeons or maps you're adding. It's live events. So, you know, we just had St. Patrick's Day, and a whole bunch of games on our platform had special St. Patrick's Day events.
Yes.
That are sort of, you know, new content, special promotions, special offers, these kinds of things that are being done to make it special. Not unlike, you know, Disney World when they have, you know, Halloween, they redecorate the entire theme park for Halloween, right? So that's events. A big part of live ops is knowing what's going on inside your game. So analytics and data and business intelligence, this notion of games, now that we have the internet, games no longer, it used to be back in PopCap, we'd ship a game and we had no connection whatsoever with the game once it's out the door. Where now, you can have this sort of two-way conversation with your players where you can be seeing, frankly, how they're playing the game, learning from that, and use that to tune the game experience to be even more interesting. You know, where is it too hard? Where is it too easy? Where are players dropping out? How do we fix that? So there's that conversation you can have, that data analytics, that's huge.
Right.
There is monetization, and no, it's a reality. Game developers have to make money or they can't make the next game. They can't continue. And now the games are going free-to-play, managing the in-game economy becomes, frankly, tricky. If you don't get it right, then, you know, either you're charging too much and players are like, I'm not interested, or you're not charging enough and you're out of business. And so you've got to get that balance right. So that's another aspect, is the ability to, again, run your store, run your economy, make special offers, all those kinds of things. There's more, but that is sort of the major set of topics to go into live ops.
And when you see somebody build a game with live ops versus somebody who doesn't build with live ops, like, do you notice a difference with it? Like, what does it look like in the trends of money made and things like
actually,
that?
Like, I actually think I've got a graph in, like, early on in this book. Let me see if I can tell. Yeah, okay. You're not going to be able to see this. But there's a graph here. And it's funny because we have a graph of what happened to two games, one with live ops, one without live ops. The game without live ops launched. It got an editor's choice promotion from Apple, which is like, it used to be that was like, okay, you've now made it. And then sure enough, this game, huge jump in downloads. And then if you look at the trend, it's like week after week after week, it's like a slow descent as gamers eventually get bored and tune out. And because they're not updating and they're not maintaining the game post-launch, they just eventually trail off until there you are, you know, a few months after launch and you're basically at zero.
Yeah.
And that's what a game looks like without live ops. That used to be the main model. People would buy a game, it was in the top 10 for a few weeks and it was gone. And that was fine when you made, you know, $80 or $60, whatever it was at that one-time sale. But if a game is free and you're depending on that model, you're stuck. If people stop playing your game, you're out. Whereas a game with live ops, the game in that graph actually did the complete opposite approach. They started with an MVP. They started with a very, MVP means minimum viable product. They started with a very minimal game, and they just got out as fast as they could. Actually, it's Fluffy Fairy, one of our
great guys. Great.
Game called Idle Miner Tycoon, quick plug, great game, Idle Miner Tycoon. Built on PlayFab. They're doing everything right in my book, because they started a simple game, didn't do a lot, got it out there, saw what worked, and then very slowly and systematically over more than a year have improved the game, added features, added live ops, run events, and their usage and revenue has just kept climbing, you know, week after week.
Right.
To the point now where they're just a huge success. They're now investing in more games, growing the studio, all the good things a developer should do.
Right. So this manual you have right here would teach people how to do that exactly.
Yeah.
So if you're a game developer and you want to know, hey, how do I get that same model where my trend line goes up, I'm making money constantly, this will teach you that.
Right. We basically sat down, because here's our problem. Our problem is, PlayFab provides technology for live ops.
Okay.
Most game developers out there today still don't know what that is or how to do it, right? And so we realized that, that's a shame because it means they're not competitive. I mean, I can't tell you how many games launch that we are friends with and it just doesn't work. They don't know these models.
Right.
So we realized we have to educate the game industry. And so we've been running workshops, we've been doing sessions at Casual Connect, we're doing talks here at the show. But we realized that for this show, we wanted to write a book that basically was like everything we know about live ops.
Yeah.
And so I think it's like 20 chapters in here, and we basically cover all the major areas. And it's not, frankly, PlayFab specific. There are some things in here that we tell you to do that we can't even support you yet on our back end, because there are things you need to do. We'll eventually get there. We'll eventually add features to support that. But for now, know what it is. You need to do that. There's ways to do it with, you know, other tech or on your own. But that really is our distillation of what to do.
Right. And so you guys have a presence here at GDC too, right?
Yeah.
You have a booth.
Right, exactly. So we have So we have our own booth, yeah. Which is the big PlayFair booth. It's over that way. It's, you know, a big, right. big PlayFair booth. We're also in two other booths this year. So we're actually here in the Microsoft Azure booth,
yes.
which is super exciting. And we're also in upstairs the Microsoft ID at Xbox Lobby
right.
Bar.
Right.
And we have a, we built, every year we build a demo game for GDC that we use to kind of show off PlayFab. This year it's called Unicorn Dash, and it's a multiplayer unicorn racing game. And you play it, you earn virtual currency, and we have a little store where you can use the virtual currency to buy swag.
Gotcha.
And the whole thing is being run by PlayFab. We also have events in there that we can run and schedule as a way of showing off how you can use the back end to sort of schedule events in a game.
Gotcha. So if somebody wants to see how this works, come visit one of the booths there to,
yep.
to kind of see
visit
it.
Booth, play the game on the tablet,
yep.
and then kind of go behind the scenes and watch the same game, but now from the back end side.
Gotcha.
You can actually watch.
Right.
It's actually kind of cool because one of the features, one of the things that makes PlayFab unique is we've really emphasized real time. Because in our mind, LiveOps platform has to be real time.
Like
our motto this year is full stack LiveOps, real time control. And the idea is, you know, while people are playing these games on the tablets, you can actually see all the data coming in real time, flowing through, and then you can actually start to change and react to the game in real time based on what you're seeing,
right.
which is super cool.
Interesting. So say I'm creating a game now, or say I've already started a game. Is it required to start with your stuff, or can I, like, you know, add it later on to,
right.
to a game?
Great question. So, for sure, the best time is when you're just starting out.
Okay.
Because it gives you the most flexibility to design your game around LiveOps, to really think to yourself, how am I going to take advantage of these tools? What do I want to build in to make it possible to configure the game in real time, and so on. But frankly, some of the most, actually, of the biggest games on the platform did not start that way. Most
okay.
of the biggest games on the platform were already successful,
mm.
and then
gotcha.
They realized, maybe a year or two after launch, that they were starting to decline.
Yep.
They wanted to start adding features of LiveOps to their game, and they came to us, and then we helped them integrate new features into an already live game. So
right.
One of the first kind of big hit games on the platform was Adventure Capitalist from Hyper Hippo, an
yep.
idle clicker game. They've been live for, I don't know, a year and a half. They already had, I think, 5 or 6 million monthly active players. But they wanted to do more live events. They wanted to do events more often. And before they came to us, every time they wanted to do a live event, they had to actually push a new update to the client. And it was inefficient. And so
yeah.
we helped them wire in support through PlayFab to run events more frequently from the back end side. And they did a very, they were cautious. They did a multi sort of phased rollout
right.
where it took them probably 3 or 4 months to fully implement all the features. Because they didn't want to ruin or affect their existing players. But it was very successful, and now they've been on this for more than a year. They've actually turned things around. Their usage is actually going up, and revenue is going up,
Great.
Because they're actually now in that virtuous cycle of really effective live ops.
Great. So you've probably seen a lot of people build or start or try. Could you, like, do you have learnings of, like, some of the biggest, like, what would I avoid if I'm a developer doing this to start with? Like, top three mistakes.
Yeah, okay, so top three. So the single biggest mistake is launching a game with no analytics, with no
okay.
instrumentation wired up. And I can't tell you how many developers are like, oh, I'll do that later. Like, I gotta launch it first, and then later I'll add analytics.
Yep.
But that's like, a good analogy here, that's like saying I'm gonna basically, you know, set out in my car, but I'll close my eyes. You know, I'm gonna drive blind.
Right.
And it's crazy, because when you do that, you know, let's think two scenarios. Scenario one, your game's a failure out of the gate. Like, you launch it and it just is a dud. Well, with no instrumentation, you're never going to know, like, what happened, right? You're not going to know, why did it just fall flat? And you have no chance to fix it, because you don't know what to fix.
Yes.
Other scenario, the game comes out of the gate and it's a smash hit. And now you've got all these players in there for that brief window.
Yes.
And if you don't know what's going on and what's successful, you don't know how to sort of, you know, take advantage of that and grow it. And so either way, you need to have instrumentation in there from day one.
Gotcha.
So that's the first mistake. Don't, you know, launch a game where they don't know what's going on in the game.
Gotcha.
Beyond that, probably the second mistake is not having enough of the game configuration exposed on the server side so you can change it.
Mm.
Because once your game is live, you may want to tune it and tweak it. You may want to run special events on weekends, you know, to change how the game behaves. All of that depends on having all of your configuration exposed, almost like knobs, you know, on a dashboard, so you can go in there and fiddle the knobs and change the configuration
yep.
after the fact. Third biggest mistake, probably it is not experimenting enough. You know, they just assume they know what's right and they just go with it. And there's nothing wrong with gut intuition. You know, most of key decisions are coming from that place of your gut instinct.
Right, okay.
But there's a lot of things where our guts are often wrong. And the ability to try out different things and try out different, like if you're fighting with your team over whether, you know, you should, your tutorial should be longer or shorter.
Yep.
Try both and see what happens. And
right.
Nowadays, because of the data tools, you can do both and learn what works.
Yeah.
And challenge your assumptions.
Gotcha. So if I'm a developer and I want to start in this like today, are you only tied to certain game engines or like how do you work like across different platforms?
Right.
Like
right. So again, not only is it a platform neutral, but we're also engine neutral. So we have SDKs for Unity, Unreal. There's a new engine growing really quickly called Phaser, which is really popular for HTML5 games.
Yep.
We have a JavaScript engine for people who want to just build it right into like a web browser. So we have a whole bunch of, I think, 14 different SDKs, all available from our website. So I would tell people, go to playfit.com, create an account. Create an account's free. Our pricing model is such that you don't pay anything at all until you have 1,000 players. And then once you have 1,000 players, then we start charging.
Gotcha.
Well, actually, then you can choose either a free tier, where you can keep growing your players and never pay anything, but we have limited features. Or the professional tier, where all the features are unlocked, but now you're paying on a per monthly active player basis, per MAU basis.
Right.
And it's all on our website. But that's what it means is you don't pay anything up until the point when your game goes live. That was really the intent of our pricing model. So there's no cost to try it out.
Great.
And then you can download the SDK for the engine. We have tutorials and guides and sample projects and, you know, pretty good for a startup. I think we have pretty good documentation. And now that we're, you know, part of Microsoft, we're going to be really doubling down and investing a whole lot more in documentation tutorials.
That's good. And I do have to ask too, like, you know, so now you're part of Microsoft. Is this going to become like just only an Xbox thing, or, you know, what's the philosophy?
Yeah, no. And this is like the new Microsoft. Maybe one day that would have been the fact. Microsoft would have said, "We're buying you, and now you have to only support Windows and only support Xbox." But no, nowadays, this is the new Microsoft, and we're being told, keep doing what you're doing. Support every platform, support every engine. We had to do some special paperwork with legal to continue supporting PlayStation because we're part of the Xbox team supporting PlayStation.
Nice.
And so, you know, we're really committed to continuing to be across every engine, every platform, even, you know, other cloud service providers. So we're gonna, if you wanna run your data warehouse on Google or Amazon, great, we'll support you with that.
Yeah.
Because we don't wanna ever have our developers feel locked in or feel that they're not able to make the choices they want to make for that platform.
Yeah, gotcha. And I also have to ask you, you know, now that you're part of Microsoft, like from your own personal experience, what's the most surprising thing that you found coming here?
Right.
Like, from perception-wise to what you actually found, right?
Gosh, so we've been part of Microsoft now for just under 2 months, I think it was. And it's been a rush. It's been full on. I think we knew Microsoft was excited about sort of, you know, investing in PlayFab, right? And I kind of thought that meant we'd come in and our budgets would go up. And first of all, it means we wouldn't have to worry about like running out of money, you know, again, you know, startups can be tricky sometimes. But I also thought that it meant, you know, we'd get more headcount and we'd grow the team organically and that would be fine. What I didn't expect, the biggest surprise, is how much amazing technology Microsoft's already built internally for its own projects. That's in some ways better than what we already had in PlayFab. Mm. And what I hadn't expected is we're being encouraged now, almost like a kid with a shopping basket, to go around the company, finding these technologies that exist and integrating them to PlayFab so every developer can use them. So we're having conversations with like the Minecraft team. You know, there's an amazing commerce system built to support Minecraft. We're looking at bringing parts of that into PlayFab. There's like 20 data scientists doing data science around analytics for these first party games. We're looking at bringing those into PlayFab. Matchmaking technology from Xbox Live is state of the art. We're looking at bringing that into PlayFab. So all these areas that we're now using to sort of accelerate and grow our product in ways that I had not at all expected is frankly awesome and really exciting.
Excellent. So we should see some great stuff from PlayFab coming out.
Yeah.
I mean, so Microsoft's committed to gaming then.
Great. Exactly. I mean, I can say, the minute the acquisition was announced, like half my customers called me and said, "James, like, should we be worried? Is this going to happen to PlayFab?"
Right.
And I'm like, "Listen, Microsoft is all in on gaming. I don't know if everyone quite realized this because most people don't care about like org chart changes outside a company, but part of what led to us being acquired in the first place, Phil Spencer, who runs gaming at Microsoft, recently got promoted to work directly for the CEO, Satya.
Yeah.
And again, to people outside the world, that may not seem like a big deal. It's a big deal because it means that Microsoft, from the top level down, is making a statement: gaming matters. Gaming is now right up there alongside Windows and Office and Azure and gaming.
Gotcha.
And so that's a big deal. And so they're all in. And we're starting to already have conversations about how our technology can be used in other games within Microsoft. So if you know, the day that Minecraft is using parts of PlayFab means PlayFab is not going to get this like unilaterally shut down for no reason,
right.
You know, which is
right.
Which is the people fear. The fear is,
yeah, totally.
Microsoft, big company.
Yeah.
Why should they care about gaming? Maybe they'll just be capricious and do some stupid thing like shut you down and then I'm stuck. No,
yeah.
We're all in on this one.
Yeah, good. And let's finish up too. I know you guys here at GDC have a special offer. I mean,
yep.
It's a limited offer too, I believe. But tell me just a little bit about that. Like, how
yeah,
do you get
so, that? So I think, again, going back to this theme of looking at all the resources in Microsoft, there's a lot of things Microsoft's doing to help gamers that are not always very well known. So
yeah.
PlayFab is great, and hopefully a lot of people watching this know about PlayFab now. But there's something called App Center. App Center is started with something called Hockey App, which is a technology for deploying mobile apps. And it's actually really cool. We actually used it at the show, that Unicorn Dash game we did, we actually deployed that with this Hockey App.
Yeah.
And it's super awesome. I woke up this morning, last night there was a bug. I woke up this morning, there was an update for that game ready. I ran the game, it said, do you want to update? Yes, click, boom, update. It's like the best way to sort of manage and deploy your mobile app. So App Center is cool. And then Azure. Azure has a lot of backend technology that goes beyond what PlayFab does. And so, some of the best games using PlayFab mix and match PlayFab with some of their own technology they built on their own cloud tech.
Right.
So what we've done is put together an offer saying, what's the best thing for game developers? Let's give them a package of free PlayFab, free App Center, and free Azure. And I think it's valued at like $2,500.
Yeah, okay.
For anyone who signs up basically now or during the next month.
Right.
And so you go to, let's make it right,
aka.ms/GDC offer. Yes, I've
there
seen that, yes.
And you go there, you sign up, you have to go, first you sign up for Azure account, then you go to PlayFab, go to PlayFab account.
Okay.
So it's only for new customers, and you basically get a year's worth of all this stuff for free.
And that's normally something you would pay real dollars for.
Yeah.
You're actually just getting for free.
Right, the PlayFab one, is, and the PlayFab alone is worth $1,200.
Wow.
And then I know the Azure and the App Center is another, I think, $1,300 worth of value.
Okay. Sounds good. So aka.ms/GDC offer. Okay, cool. Very good. Hey, James, been very good talking to you.
Thank you. Really
excited to have you guys part of the Microsoft family. So, hey, thanks for joining us today.
Awesome.
Appreciate
Great.
It. Yep.
Cheers.
And thanks everyone for tuning in.